Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of GTI Insights, the Global Taiwan Institute's policy podcast. My name is Marshall Reed, and I'm a program manager here at GTI. And today I'm so thrilled to be joined by Dr. Nicola Casarini, an associate fellow at the Instituto Affari Internazionali in Rome, as well as a global fellow at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. At IEI, Nicola conducts really fascinating and timely research on a variety of topics related to the intersection of Europe and the Indo-Pacific, including EU-China relations, Chinese foreign policy, and broader Indo-Pacific security. His work has been published in journals and news outlets around the world, and his monograph, Remaking Global Order, was published in 2009. Nicola, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, Nicola, we're so excited to have you here to share your perspectives at such an interesting time for Italian foreign policy. For much of the past decade plus, Italy has been really one of the People's Republic of China's strongest advocates in Europe, even becoming the first G7 nation to sign on to China's vaunted Belt and Road Initiative in 2019. However, recent developments could signal that approach could be changing. In the wake of Giorgia Meloni's election in October, Italian foreign policy towards China and Taiwan seems really more uncertain than ever. So with all that in mind, I'm so glad to have you here with us today to really cover all the details that are making this time so interesting for Italy.
I'd like to just get started kind of broadly and just discuss Italy's Asia policy. Specifically, can you give us an overview of how Rome has traditionally approached both China and Taiwan?
You know, thank you, Marshall, for this opportunity. Actually, I was thinking about that because I recently finished an article on how Italy approaches China and more generally East Asia. My findings are that in general, Italy has approached East Asia, so China and Taiwan included, from a pretty mercantilist point of view, very similar to what Germany has been doing over the last three decades. I'm going to give you some examples so you can understand what I mean. We all remember Tiananmen and the crackdown by the PLA on students. Now, guess who was the first European country that raised the issue among other members of the European community at that time in July 1989 to restart links with China? It was Italy. It was Italy's foreign minister at that time. His name was Gianni De Michelis, who met a Chinese diplomat at the United Nations in July 1989, and he proposed to restart exchanges with China. After Tiananmen, the Europeans had frozen any contact, any relationship with China, and imposed sanctions. Italy was the first country to relaunch the debate inside Europe to revive exchanges with China. And in the following months, in summer 1989, most of the sanctions were lifted, with the exception of the arms embargo. I'm going to give you another example. 2003, when the Europeans proposed to lift the arms embargo in China, which has never been lifted because of the strong intervention of Washington, of the United States. However, in 2003, some member states proposed to lift the arms embargo in China. Who were these member states of the European Union? Germany, France, Italy, and the UK. So Italy has always been at the forefront of trying to engage China across the board, including initiatives such as the lifting of the arms embargo that had been imposed after Tiananmen, that would, of course, create a difficult situation for the United States, Taiwan, and the rest of the Asian allies of the United States. I'm going to give you the last example. In 2015, when China launched the Asian Investment Infrastructure Bank, you know, the famous bank that has since accompanied the development of the Belt and Road Initiative, who were the first countries in the world to join the AIIB? It was European countries. So the UK was the first one, but the day after, France, Germany, and Italy joined the AIIB. These are just some of the examples. Italy is not the only one. As I've just told you, other member states like Germany, France, and to some extent also the UK have traditionally looked at China and East Asia in general from a mercantilist point of view in terms of doing business, in trying to reach out to China. And this has been a tradition in Italy's foreign policy ever since. And that's why I said it's very similar to Germany. Now, We have had some changes in the last years, in particular with the arrival of the Draghi government and the current one. I think it is something that maybe your audience will be interested in. It will probably be the next question.
Great. And you're right. That's definitely the next place I want to go. I'm glad you really characterized Italy as kind of on the forefront in engaging with China with this sort of mercantilist policy of doing business with China. You know, obviously, Italy was the first G7 country to join, as you mentioned, the Belt and Road Initiative, which is really viewed by a lot of people, I think, as sort of an inflection point in China's relationship with Europe. Can you talk a little bit about what led Italy to do that? And, you know, what factors were kind of driving Italy to join the BRI?
Okay, when I say mercantilist approach, is mainly because Italy and the rest of Europe does not have binding military alliances in East Asia. Europeans may contribute now and then with some naval vessels and freedom of operation and freedom of navigation operations. But in general, we are not committed to Asian security. That makes things much easier from an European point of view in terms of engaging China, even if it comes at a cost for some of the United States allies, such as Taiwan. So I just wanted to make sure of this because it is something that in Washington is difficult sometimes to understand why the Europeans are engaging China in a way that would have been impossible from an American perspective. And of course, the case of the Belt and Road Initiative is right to the point. As you mentioned, it was an inflection point. What explained that? Again, we have to remember what I just said to you, the idea in Italy and also in other member states of the European Union, but let's remain focused on Italy, that the security in East Asia is left to the care of the United States, of the American ally. Hence, Italians feel free to engage Asian countries across the board, all Asian countries, including China. Now, when China started to develop the Belt and Road Initiative, you may remember that the initial maps had the end point of the maritime road in Venice. It was promoted as the new Silk Road connecting China with Europe. And who is the person that embodies this kind of connection in history? It's Marco Polo, the Venetian trader. Now, at that point, Italy and the Mediterranean were around 2013, 2014, when the Belt and Road Initiative was developed, became a focus of attention by Chinese leaders. China had traditionally overlooked the Mediterranean. Other parts of the world were of much more concern for the Chinese leadership. But with the development of the Belt and Road Initiative and the end point of the maritime road being the Mediterranean, with Italy at the center of the Mediterranean Sea, Italy regained a strategic importance in Chinese eyes, which meant that Italy began to receive quite a lot of Chinese investments. Traditionally, until the beginning of the last decade, Chinese investments in Europe would go to the United Kingdom, France, and Germany. But after the Belt and Road Initiative was unveiled, Italy became a focus of attention and became the end point of a lot of Chinese investments, to the point that in 2015, Italy was the number one destination of Chinese investments in Europe. This gave you the background within which Italian leaders began to reach out to China and issue declarations in favor of the Belt and Road Initiative. I remember the President of the Republic of Italy, Sergio Mattarella, during a speech at Fudan University in Shanghai in 2017, declaring that Italy would join the Belt and Road Initiative, and that the Belt and Road Initiative was such a great and magnificent project, and Italy wanted to be part of it. It means that when, in March 2019, the coalition government in power in Rome at that time, formed by two, we can call it populist and anti-establishment parties, one was the Movement 5-Star and the other one was the League, decided to officially joined the Belt and Road Initiative. It was during the state visit of Xi Jinping in Rome in March 2019, When Italy and China signed an official document whereby Italy was officially joining the Belt and Road Initiative, the ground had already been prepared by other politicians belonging to the center-left Democratic Party, including the President of the Republic of Italy, that had already said years before that Italy would join the Belt and Road Initiative. What were the main reasons for Italy to join the BRI? It was material reasons, but also ideological reasons. Material reasons, it was, as I just mentioned before, the welcoming of Chinese investments in Italy that at that time were seen as good, as positive for jobs creation, and for also they were symbolizing the attractiveness of the Italian market internationally. But it was also about gaining access to the Chinese market. I remember looking at the national television in 2019, and the ministers more involved in the preparation of welcoming Xi Jinping and in the signing, in the official ceremony surrounding the Belt and Road Initiative, so the Italy joining the Belt and Road Initiative, they were explaining to public opinion that by joining the BRI, Italian products, the made in Italy products, would have better access to the Chinese market, something that would make happy a lot of small and medium-sized enterprises in Italy that were hoping to gain access to the Chinese market. Has it happened? Not completely, but that was the way it was sold to public opinion. So there were like material interest, access to the Chinese market, but also a welcoming approach to Chinese investments in Italy. But let me finish also with another element. It was ideological reasons. And I think this is something that it is a bit missed in Washington and Taipei. When I say ideological reasons, we have to go back to what I said to you at the beginning. Italy has traditionally been very interested in reaching out to the People's Republic of China, and sometimes it was the first European country to reach out, as I mentioned before, even 1 month after Tiananmen. So Christian Democrats that have traditionally ruled Italy since the end of the Second World War have been those that right in the 60s would promote Italy-China ties. The President of the Republic now comes from this tradition, the Christian Democrats. They have a Catholic approach to politics, and they believe that China should be engaged and China should not be left outside the Society of Nations. And therefore, even if China may be seen as a dictatorship, as a very terrible state when it comes to human rights and democracy, nonetheless, it has to be engaged. And I'm going to tell you something that, again, also this factor is missed in Washington. This is very much linked up to what the Vatican is doing. Remember that politics in Rome has traditionally been influenced by the Vatican. Italy has been ruled for almost 50 years by a party which was called the Christian Democrats that was getting the votes also because of the proximity with the Vatican, with the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, since the arrival of Pope Francis, has been engaged in a charm offensive, we can call it this way, towards the PRC. And in fact, there have been various attempts by China and the Vatican to reach an agreement on the appointment of bishops, etc., etc. Now, many people don't know, but when Xi Jinping came to Rome in March 2019, because of the ceremony of Italy joining the BRI, a Chinese delegation met with some representatives from the Vatican in secret to continue the discussion that has been going on for some years between the Vatican and the People's Republic of China. So to conclude, Italy's joining the BRI was motivated by material interest, but also ideological interest, in particular by politicians coming from this tradition of Christian Democrats that have traditionally looked at China with interest and with an approach of wanting to engage China regardless of what China was domestically. And it was very much in line with what the Vatican has been doing in the last years. So Rome is not only Italian politics, it is also the Catholic Church. And the two were engaging Beijing at the same time. This is an additional explanation of why Italy joined the BRI, an explanation that is often missed in Washington, but also in Asia.
Well, Nicola, I think that's a great point. And I think you're right that all too often that sort of ideological component is really left out of these conversations around Italy's decision to join the BRI. I think frequently it's really framed as just a purely economic argument. And I think you're right. There are other dynamics to consider. Speaking of ideology, I'd like to turn to a politician with a very different ideology, which is Giorgia Meloni, who just recently in October was elected as prime minister of Italy. Since she's been elected, and even before, she's been a lot more vocal than previous leaders on criticizing China and speaking out in favor of Taiwan. So I'd be curious to hear, what is the significance of these statements, and do you think policy will really change under Giorgia Meloni's government?
Yes. So just to finish about this lineage of Italian politicians, when I mentioned Christian Democrats, they're still in power, or like the president of the republic, and they have been in power also with the Draghi government, because most of the Christian Democrats ended up in the center-left Democratic Party. The Democratic Party was one of the pillars of the Draghi government, which was installed in February 2021. So until the Draghi government arrived, Italy was possibly one of the closest partners of China in the West. There was a party which is still in the parliament, which is called the Movement Five Stars, which is possibly the closest Western party to the People's Republic of China. Now, the arrival of Draghi changed a little bit the situation, but not too much. Why? Because the coalition government supporting the Draghi government, which remained in power from February 2021, until the beginning of October of 2022, the coalition government included the Movement Five Star and the Democratic Party. Again, parties that have always had some close links to China, and they have traditionally promoted closer Italy-China ties. So the real change is occurring now, because the Draghi government could not do everything that Draghi wanted to do, and like I was about to say, the whatever it takes. Draghi could not do the whatever it takes vis-a-vis China because of the coalition government supporting him. Giorgia Meloni is in a different situation. Giorgia Meloni has won the elections, and the majority is center-right, conservatives. In American politics, it would be like the Republicans have won. So you have to imagine the new government in Italy as being formed by conservatives, very close to the Republican Party in terms of agenda and topics, and not being any more hostage to some of the parties that in the past would support closer links with China. This gives Giorgia Meloni much more leeway to do things vis-a-vis Taiwan that nobody has ever done in Italian politics. Meloni already met for the first time in Italian history the representative of Taiwan in July, calling him the ambassador of Taiwan. And we know what the importance of this gesture is. Not only that, he promised the ambassador of Taiwan in Italy that once she would become prime minister, Taiwan will be a major concern for Italy, and that she will help the development of Italy-Taiwan ties, but also the development of ties between Taiwan and the European Union. Meloni said in summer, once the government was formed, one of the first gestures of Meloni again, the press has not talked too much about that, was again to send a message to Taiwan saying that her government was interested in fostering both economic and political relations. Now, eventually, economic lobbies in Italy, the lobbies that have traditionally been interested in having good links with China, that had vested interest in China, put pressure on Meloni, who eventually met President Xi Jinping at the margin of the G20 summit in Bali, where they discussed about Italy-China relations, and where Meloni said to Xi Jinping that provocations should be avoided in cross-strait relations. But we know that the term provocations is understood differently in Beijing and in Rome, as it is understood differently if you are in Washington or in Beijing, which means that Meloni, on the one hand, in the last weeks, has reached out to China, also because of the strong lobby by some companies and the economic interest in Italy still connected to China. Yet at the same time, the new government is trying to devise a Taiwan policy, a policy that has never been part of Italian foreign policy in the past. So it would be the first time for a country like Italy, which does not have security commitments in Asia, which is not invested in cross-strait relations, but nonetheless, given the changed situation around Taiwan and the support for Taiwanese democracy, which is very popular among Italian public opinion, for the first time, the Italian government is trying to devise a distinctive Taiwan policy that would, of course, would create some problems with Beijing, but it is also a message that the Italian government is sending to Washington and to the EU that the period of mercantilism may still be there, but it is not anymore only about economic issues. The idea that China has to be engaged at all costs might be over, and that it could be the beginning of a new era whereby Italy becomes much tougher on China, close to Taiwan, and it would be a kind of a complete reversal of what Italy was only a few years ago, when Italy was the first and only, so far, G7 nation to officially join the BRI. And now Italy might be the first big European country to adopt a position on Taiwan which is much more in line with Washington than what, for instance, Germany or France might be ready to do. So we have here a complete reversal of a foreign policy towards East Asia, in particular towards China and Taiwan, which rarely happens in European politics. But then here we have the case of a country, Italy, that has gone from joining the BRI and embracing China in March 2019 to autumn, fall 2022 with a new government that instead of embracing China is embracing Taiwan and is trying to save some form of like relationship with China, but with the focus much more now on values than business.
Well, Nicola, I think it's a great overview. I'm so curious to hear. I mean, it really has been fascinating to watch. Italy, more than almost any other country, has had this 180 degrees turnaround. I'd be curious to hear what we're always looking at with Italy is, you know, there's been several government changes over the last couple of years. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. I can ask you to speculate a little bit. You know, how enduring is this shift? Should a new government come in the next couple of years, you know, do you think this is something that'll continue? You mentioned that there's widespread public opinion support for Taiwan. It sounds like there is strong advocacy for Taiwan within the Italian government, but it also sounds like there's fairly strong pushback from businesses that are interested in China. Curious to hear, do you have a sense of what do you think will happen in the future?
Yes, I think this moment may not change, so we don't need to wait for the new government, for the next government. I think the current government is already under pressure from economic lobbies to relaunch relations with China. After the meeting between Meloni and Xi Jinping, the Italian government announced the closing of a deal with China. China will buy 250 aircrafts built by Leonardo and Airbus. Leonardo is former Finmeccanica, is the most important aerospace and defense company in Italy. That was a kind of like a shock for many observers in Italy, because to sell 250 aircrafts to China at a moment where China is, has a lot of negative perceptions in Europe and in Italy, at a time when the government is putting so much emphasis on Taiwan, on supporting Taiwanese democracy, etc., makes me think that economic lobbies will make it very much difficult for the Italian government, for the current Italian government, to pursue along the lines that I just said to you. So now we are at the beginning, and we are probably witnessing a lot of declarations and willingness to take side in favor of Taiwan. But I do not think that it's going to last, again, because a lot of small and medium-sized enterprises, along with some big companies in Italy, are heavily dependent on import-export from China. And the Taiwanese market is very little compared to the Chinese one. Moreover, although you do not have the ideological reasons towards China that you had in the past, and you have ideological reasons that are pushing this current government in supporting Taiwanese democracy, the two are quite different. Why? Because in the past, the idea of engaging with China came from Italian politicians and the Vatican, which still has a lot of influence on Italy. In this case, Taiwan first policy, meaning that Taiwan is considered more important than China for this current government, at least in terms of like supporting democracy and values, does not meet what the Vatican is doing. So already here we have something that it is not well captured, well understood abroad. The Vatican is still influential, and the Vatican is more and more invested in having a dialogue and a deal with China. In fact, they renewed the accord only a few weeks ago, the Vatican, the PRC, which means that the current government will try to promote this embrace of Taiwan. But again, I think that on the one hand, economic lobbies will put pressure on this government to change course and to rebalance and to try to, again, promote Italy-China ties, to put aside some rhetoric regarding Taiwan so as not to send an unfriendly message to China. And the Vatican could also play a role, because the Vatican is invested in reaching a deal with the PRC, meaning that the Pope is ready, if he agrees on a deal with Xi Jinping, to switch diplomatic relations, very much what happened with the United States in the 70s. The Vatican is the last European country to continue to have official diplomatic relations with Taiwan. But then the Vatican may switch diplomatic relations if an agreement with the PRC is found. So again, you also have to take that into consideration. So I do not think that the current government will be able to sustain what I call a Taiwan-first policy for long, given these factors, economic pressure, and the lack of a support coming from a country which is very small but has a lot of influence when it comes to soft power, which is the Vatican, which is taking a different direction. For the Vatican, now the priority is to find a deal with the PRC. So this could explain why I expect this government not to be able in the long term to continue a sustained policy towards Taiwan, as now, as at least now, which we can say we are at the beginning. And who knows what's going to happen once another government comes. Of course, this is unpredictable, but probably it will never be as Taiwan-friendly as this one. So I think this one, this current government has a window of opportunity for still a few months, and then we will see, and they would expect some backlash from economic lobbies, from other like sectors. And what I would expect is to go back to a traditional policy whereby Italy seeks economic advantage in the Chinese market and also in the Taiwanese market, but with much less support for Taiwanese democracy, since that would risk jeopardizing ties with China.
Sure. I want to quickly follow up on something you said there. And you mentioned that the current government might have a window, you know, a brief period when it can really capitalize on this really interesting turn towards Taiwan. I'm curious to think whether within Italy or within the European Union or internationally, what are some things that the Italian government right now can do to meaningfully support Taiwan?
I think what they can do, and they will probably do, is to join the United States and the European allies in providing support to Taiwan, not only in words, but also in deeds. So in words will be declarations, but in deeds will also be sending delegations of lawmakers. So I would expect a delegation of Italian lawmakers to visit Taiwan quite soon. I would expect also an upgrade of economic ties. There are also discussions about creating an Italy-Taiwan Chamber of Commerce, which doesn't exist. That would also be a strong signal sent to Taiwan. So I think like there will be things that the government can do. Now, it depends whether it will be able to do all these things or it will be stopped at a certain point by the vested interests and the lobbies I mentioned before. So there are certain things that can be done alone, so Italy and Taiwan, but also, and more easily done also from an Italian perspective, with the United States and European allies. It could also be like a joint Western delegation of lawmakers and some Italian lawmakers like joining this delegation. So these are all initiatives that the current government very likely will support. But again, it could be stopped. It could be stopped. Now, something that can actually be done more concretely in terms of bilateral ties between Italy and Taiwan is some form of discussions about what could be Italy's and also Europe's contribution to cross-strait relations.
Well, Nicola, thank you so much for giving us so much detail about these really interesting relationships between Italy and China and Taiwan. I think you've made it really clear that this isn't purely economic, this isn't purely ideological. It really is this confluence of a lot of different factors coming together all at once. It's going to be so interesting to watch what happens with the Meloni government over the next couple months, over the next year, and see if they can really capitalize on what you've characterized as this sort of brief window of opportunity for the relationship with Taiwan. But we'll be watching closely here, and I think you've given us a great background. So thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to all our listeners for joining us for another episode of GTI Insights. Many thanks also to the great staff and interns at GTI for all their help with every step of producing this podcast. If you're interested in learning more about GTI, be sure to check out our website at globaltaiwan.org, where you can find information about our Global Taiwan Brief, our frequent public seminars, and our other podcasts. You can also listen to more episodes of GTI Insights on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Until next time, this has been GTI Insights.